My name is Simon Carlos, and I'm an administrator or curator at the Internet Archive. And the Internet Archive is a non-profit that's based in San Francisco. And I help out on a number of collections, some of the audio and video collections at the Archive as well. But I'm particularly interested in software because my background is in video games. I was a game designer for Eidos and Infogrames and some other companies. So I have particular interest in that area. So. What I'm going to talk about is the Archive's efforts to get an exemption to the DMCA and then some of the projects that we're working on with relation to software and video games and things like that. Firstly, a little bit about the Internet Archive, because I think a lot of people have seen parts of the Internet Archive, but they may not know what it is and where it's located and how it's run. So it's a non-profit, and it was formed in 1996 by Brewster Kahle, who was the founder of Alexa Internet, which is now owned by Amazon.com, and it's funded by grants from the Hewlett Foundation and the Sloan Foundation, and also from grants from Brewster himself. And probably if you know about it, you know about the Wayback Machine, which is the web archive that we have, which is a number of terabytes now of pages going all the way back to 1996. So if you had a website, you can look it up on the Wayback Machine and you will probably see what was there all the way back to 96. But I think some people don't realize we actually have, as well as the web collection, we have a bunch of other collections as well. So. Just to show you some of the other stuff we have, we have a live music archive collection, which is now 13,000 concerts, actually 13,500 concerts, and all of these are freely downloadable. So we really try and make all kinds of media collections available, and we have a Net Labels collection now, which is over 2,000 shows, and most of that is all audio that's Creative Commons licensed again. So, over multiple collections, we're really trying to develop things that are freely downloadable for everybody in a bunch of media. And although we don't have a software tab up here right now, that's basically what we're working on right now. We're working on software-related collections, and in fact, some of the software-related collections are movies, so they're stuck in the movie collection right now. But we may actually move them across in time. So. I guess the Archive's interest in software started in 2002 when we were given a substantial amount of CD-ROMs. So in our physical archives in San Francisco, we have about 10,000 CD-ROMs, which all date from the early 90s. So we were interested in ways we could archive this. But we were finding if we copied the CD-ROM to hard drive and we tried to run it, it required the CD to be inserted. And that's an access protection because the CD has to be in for it to work, and this is a problem if you want to archive stuff properly, because you need to circumvent the access protection to do so. Otherwise, you won't be able to check to see whether it's been archived properly, because you'll just run it and it'll say the CD needs to be inserted. You can't really tell at that point. So we thought this was a concern which could possibly extend, and in fact, one of the movies we were trying to archive is the failing ephemeral films, and this is a CD-ROM from Voyager, and this is from say 1993 or so, and this is a good example, because if you try and archive this CD and copy it to hard drive, then you need to have some kind of virtual disk software to actually get it running, and right now under the DMCA, even if you're doing it for archival purposes, well, this used to be the case, then you're not actually allowed to do that. It's a felony. So we looked into methods of archiving them to hard disk, and we found that many have these access protection problems. So it seems to us, but by our reading, that if you're an archival institution, you are allowed to make limited amounts of copies of things, but under the DMCA, you weren't allowed to circumvent access protection to make these limited copies. So that was a problem we had, basically. So we ended up petitioning with the help of a number of people the Library of Congress, because every 3 years, the DMCA, which is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, has an exemption hearing, and you can go ahead and ask for certain things to be excluded. And so we went ahead in 2003 and wrote a couple of papers, and Brewster appeared at a hearing in Los Angeles, we were really talking about the fact that although we were trying to do CD-ROMs, we were starting to look at floppy disks as well, and it really wasn't clear to us whether access protection would stop us archiving floppy disks as well. And in fact, my other prop here is a copy of RoboCop 3 for the Amiga, which is actually quite a good game, despite the fact it's based on RoboCop 3. If you look in here, we have the original floppy disks, and we also have a joystick dongle. And there weren't a lot of these made because I think it got cracked very soon after release. But this is an example of something where this is a very clear example of access protection, basically, because if you don't have this inserted, then you won't be able to play the game. And if you manage to back this up to a PC hard drive, clearly you can't. There's no Amiga joystick port on your PC, so there isn't any way to do that. And you'd be breaking the DMCA if you tried to do any dongle emulation or similar. So if we look at this, and we're also concerned about the life of magnetic media, maybe CD-ROMs are a little bit better. That remains to be seen. Certainly, some CDRs have a short life. But in terms of magnetic media, it's maybe 10 to 30 years before that media becomes unreadable. So it's important to do something with a lot of this stuff now. Otherwise, it's not going to be around in a number of years' time. So we submitted a written comment and a reply comment, and we participated in the hearings. In October 2003, the exemption was granted. So we have a little page explaining that. So basically, the Copyright Office holds a rulemaking proceeding about it, and in fact, I think Henry, maybe 3 years, not five, So there's going to be another rulemaking in 2006, and in fact, the way it works with these exemptions is you don't get them forever. You have to keep proving them over and over again. So. It's kind of important if we go back in 2006 and say, well, we've done five games, then that's not really going to impress them, and they're probably not going to give us the exemption again. So it's important that we get going on this stuff. Otherwise we won't really have much excuse when we go back to the Copyright Office and ask for the exemption again. Well, I think the emulation part. There's another talk in this conference, which is emulation, and there are some people, particularly Isvan, who's sitting in the front row, who knows a lot about that type of thing. So I would recommend. I mean, we're going to be dealing with it briefly, but I would recommend you come to that because we're going to be talking about bit perfect copies and difference between crack copies and bit perfect copies and things in that, and it really is pretty complicated. But yeah, So. So the Internet Archive has been looking to work with technical partners who are doing this job of actually archiving the software properly. And Henry mentioned the CAPS project, the Classic Amiga Preservation Society, and they're really they're doing a really top rate job of actually doing the bit perfect copying, which a lot of other people aren't. There's a lot of crack copies of stuff wandering around with crack intros on the front of them, and that's not really. I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's definitely not either legitimate or perfectly archived. So it would be great to really get going and do a really large number of these. So we've started. This isn't actually public on the archive site yet because it still needs to be integrated properly. But we're starting working on a classic software preservation site, and the idea is to preserve a lot of this software. And I'll give you an example page here for Blood Money. If anyone remembers this, it was an early DMA design game, and I guess Later on, DMA Designer, famous for doing Grand Theft Auto, but this was, I think, their first... No, maybe Menace was their first game, but this is like 1989, Amiga. So we've gone ahead, and it's important to note this is only a first pass at kind of metadata and scanning about how we should do it, but we've gone ahead and we've scanned the disks, and we've scanned the box, and we have high-resolution scans of this as well. And thanks to a project called the Hall of Light database, which is a very good Amiga database, we've got good screenshots as well. And actually, you know, it's a little bit of a hassle to get good screenshots of stuff, so we're trying to leverage people in the community to get stuff like this. And then, obviously, what isn't here is the actual software. And this is an important thing to note. When you're doing video game preservation, pretty much 95% of the time, you won't be able to make the software public. But it's really important that it's archived nonetheless, because in the future, someone may decide to make it public, and eventually it's going to go out of copyright. And at which point we say, well, we'd love to play Blood Money, but we don't really have any perfect copies left, and we've got some screenshots, though. Well, that's not really good enough. So so actually, if you go to the page on the site, we have... This is what our directory listing looks like for it, and you can see we have directories for the scans, and we have a bunch of XML, and we actually have the disk image. It's actually on the hard drive at the Internet Archive, but it's protected, so you can't get to it. So what we're doing is essentially here is a dark archive, and then we're going to make stuff available where it's possible to make it available. And in fact, a quick word on the metadata. We really have pretty simple metadata right now, but we thought it was important to get somewhere. So it's basic XML with Dublin core, and you can see, I mean, everyone can understand that. And then for the file metadata, this is a little more complicated because we've done hashes for everything in MD5, so we can tell if something's changed, we can check up against it. But basically, each individual file in the archive has whether the source is original or derivative, and a format for it. And then we draw that Blood Money page based on what the format is. So if the format is floppy disk cover, then we'll put it on the left hand side of the page and such like. So this is only really a first pass at a way to do it, but. What we're trying to get to is something that's at least a little bit attractive, because one of the big difficulties in video game preservation is that if you just have a list of titles that you've preserved, then no one's really interested in it, and no one can really get behind it. But if you have at least some artifacts related to it, like you can see the cover, then it becomes more exciting to people, I think. So we're still working on that, and in fact we're going to work with the people here to make it better and more detailed. And right now we only have a very few titles, but we're hoping to ramp up and really get a lot of titles preserved in that way. So I think it's important to discuss some of the other collections we're working on, because a lot of the actual game software collections, now we have the DMCA exemption. I mean, it's important stuff, but it doesn't necessarily jibe with the Internet Archive's policy of making everything publicly available. And we can't make most of this stuff publicly available. So we're trying to work on collections that are interesting and are related to games, but are publicly available. So the one that Henry already showed briefly was the Machinima Archive, which has about 60 items in it right now, and it has about 60 items in it right now, and we have the Machinima.com archive, which is about 20 gig, and another 400 or 500 items is going to be coming online in the near future. So all of this is performance. Essentially filmmaking within real-time 3D environments. And, you know, the Internet Archive as an organization has a big enough internet connection to support all these files, which are actually quite big. So, you know, it's important if you're going to archive this kind of stuff and it's all MPEG, then, you know, you really want to make sure you've got the infrastructure to support it. And I think this is... with the permission of Jake Hughes, who is one of the animators at Iron Storm, this is his adaptation of the Anachronox Anachronox intro sequence and movies, and that was all really high quality Machinima, and they actually made a custom Machinima creator for that, I think. And then another collection we're working on, which Henry mentioned tangentially, is the speedruns collection. And speedrunning is trying to complete a video game as quickly as possible. This is pretty interesting because you really get to see the actual tactics of how people get through games really quickly. And you can see some of the times here. Super Mario Brothers for the NES in 5 minutes and 10 seconds. That's pretty good. So Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo in 11 minutes and 9 seconds, which is very good as well. I've actually watched that one. They go through the Star World. If anyone knows Super Mario World very well, there's a secret world called the Star World, and you can sneak to the end. There's actually differences between speedruns, and there's actually different camps of speedrunners, and some speedrunners work with emulators and allow you to do multiple reloads, and so you can literally reload every 60th or 30th of a second, and other speedrunners only do it off the original hardware. And as you rightly say, I think the 5-minute NES one we have in here is done with emulators and multiple save states, which some people claim is cheating. But almost all of the other ones, like Super Mario World, are done on the original hardware, because the main guy who's helping contribute these right now from the Speed Demos Archive at Planet Quake is very much into the real thing. So he actually gets it on videotape. So it's output from actual. And there's even some more. There's even some more exotic stuff. There's Half-Life completed in like 52 minutes, which is pretty good as well. Fallout 2, I think Fallout 2 in 17 minutes. That seems unlikely but possible. Metal Gear Solid in an hour and 8. It's pretty interesting stuff, and it's also good because I know it's only one way of seeing how people play a game, but you really get a good idea of the tactics if you have these movies saved. So something else we're working on preserving are other movies that are related to software, and in this case, we're just starting to add some video news releases, which are the things that were sent out to TV stations around the time that games were released. And this is really good because sometimes you get pre-release footage, and sometimes you get interviews with the creators, and it's the kind of stuff related to video games that isn't the actual ROM. So this stuff's often difficult to get hold of. And indeed, if anyone has good clues on where to find some more of these video news releases, that'd be good. I think I've got something queued up here. Let's see if it works. I have got no sound on.
Biggest names in music, film, and high technology, and roll it up into a big ball, you would have, well, this. Meet Clayman. He is the first offspring of DreamWorks Interactive. DWI, as it's called, is the joint venture between Microsoft and DreamWorks SKG. Steven Spielberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, David Geffen, and Bill Gates joined forces to produce interactive entertainment software.
The significance is, basically you've got these big names and...
So this is kind of interesting, and this is just one of the things we have. But this is kind of interesting in that, well, I don't think DreamWorks Interactive, although this is from 1996, doesn't even exist anymore. It's been rolled into EA, that was just part of it. But elsewhere in here, you have interviews with the creators. So. There's Doug Ten Naple, who is the guy who founded the Neverhood, and there's Steven Spielberg talking about the game as well. So that's pretty cool. And there's a large puppet of Clayman wandering around in New York, which apparently I thought was a good idea to put in the put in the B-roll for the footage. But this kind of stuff is important because it's good additional information. It's essentially like the behind the scenes stuff on your DVD. And since it was originally given out to news outlets, we don't really see a problem with putting it online, because that they wanted to get the information out there in the first place. One other collection related to this, which again, this isn't public yet because it's only just been imported, and ideally I'm going to be adding some metadata, is another movies collection. So you'll find online, if you want to find out about a video game, you can often only find screenshots. And if you can find a movie of it actually running, then you know, maybe that only works for games from, say, 1999 onwards. If you go to GameSpot and sites like that, then they have movies online. But sometimes you have to pay for access as well. So it turns out there was this site called Video Pipeline, which gave previews to retailers. So if you went into video game stores, you would see previews running on the monitors or whatever, and it would just be in-game footage. And they ended up going out of business, so they've given us just the video game side of their operations. And again, we consider this to be fine, because game companies don't really have a problem with in-game footage hanging around. I mean, I believe some game providers have a problem if you reproduce their entire CG intro sequence or something like that, but we're not doing anything like that. So you can see there's actually over 2,000 in here, and this is just randomly when they got added. So it's from 1993 to 2003. So there's nothing pre-1993, but it's pretty useful. It's got a great deal of mainly console titles from around that time. And so it's basically a brief 30-second or one-minute clip from the game, and sometimes it's got voiceover as well. So this is really useful if, say, you're studying a particular game and you want to know what it looks like, but you don't want to have to go buy it or download it or whatever you're going to do with it. So yeah. And apart from that, I mean, I think the important thing to stress is that we're really trying. It turns out that if you're trying to preserve stuff related to games, a much easier win is the stuff that you can make publicly available, such as the movies related to an item and the stuff that Henry deals with indeed, which is the mods and things like that, stuff that's freely available. But although it's a lot more difficult, you know, we really need to get into the whole classic, you know, actual preservation of classic software, and we've got Hackatoo and Gauntlet 2 here. So I would consider, I mean, maybe it's not perfect, but I would consider Hackatoo or Gauntlet 2 to be actually preserved now in some sense, because we have a BitPerfect copy from the Caps guys, which is privately archived on our site, and we have some, although not all, of the related information. So we have box and disk scans and information up there. So what I'm hoping in the future is, you know, we can really look to see if this is right, and we can expand it to multiple genres and as many titles as we possibly can. So so that when we go back in 2006 and speak to the Copyright Office, we'll be able to show them that, you know, we've done these 2,000 titles or 5,000 titles, and we really consider that they're well preserved, and they will be made available either when copyright runs out or when the copyright holder decides that they want to make it available. So, you know, I think that's really important, because otherwise we're going to get to the stage where copyright runs out on these items in maybe X years' time. I wouldn't want to speculate on how many years that's going to be. and you'll get to the stage where, you know, maybe we don't have a perfect copy of Gauntlet 2 for the Amiga, because no one actually preserved it at the time, and all the floppy disks will be unreadable. So that in essence is what we're trying to do, and we're really going to need the help of everybody on this panel to make it happen. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sam, very much. Questions of understanding, please? There are two. Yes, please.
The way I understand you, the current situation is that you're not actually offering any Amiga games to download, is that correct?
That's correct.
I think there are several archives on the internet right now which offer pretty large legal archives.
Pretty large legal archives of Amiga games.
Are you talking about, what's the name of that? Yeah, Back to the Roots. Are you talking about Back to the Roots?
Yeah, I think they're pretty actively searching for permissions to acquire as many Amiga games as possible.
Yeah, we actually talked to Back to the Roots, and the problem is that a lot of fan bases are very possessive, and they don't really want to give us...
They don't want to give you access to the games.
No, because they're doing it themselves, and I think they consider that we're muscling in. I also consider that they're not really doing it... I don't want to get into this too much, but I don't really consider they're doing it properly. Sometimes they go find a licensed title, for example, Hagar the Horrible, which is based on a cartoon, yeah, and they go and ask the original programmer if it's okay to release it. I mean, I guess that's okay, but that's not really correct. The original
the original
programmer doesn't have any rights, and the licensor would have to agree as well. So I guess my point is that I'm hoping to be able to leverage some of the legitimate stuff that those guys have done, but sometimes in their eagerness to make stuff available, I don't really think they do it properly.
Okay, so maybe
there's a meeting or something. I have been speaking to the Back to the Roots guys, who are the main guys, but. They basically ended up saying that we could take the entirety of their collection or nothing, and that ended up being difficult. So right now, not so much. But what I'm hoping in the future is that for each individual format, there will be some people who've tried to do some work in getting permission, and we can leverage those. And there are some obvious wins just in Amiga. For example, Cinemaware have been making some of their stuff available. The revamped Cinemaware have been making some of their stuff available. And Team 17 seem to be okay with making their stuff available. So really, what we want to do is, when we get to the stage where we have some Team 17 stuff privately archived, we're going to go to Team 17 and, you know, just and see if they're fine with making that available. And then that will make the archive a lot more attractive when we have some publicly available games. In fact, that's why we haven't publicly launched it yet, because we'd like to have some publicly available games before we do so.
There was another question here. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I have questions. Mm-hmm. You talked about this DMCA exemptions and so on, and you talked about that publishers or copyright holders give their permission. But don't you think that somehow, with all this like open source and private persons collecting and releasing things, calling them abandonware, whether they are or are not, is maybe that. Copyright restricts you in the way that maybe some things at the end will only survive by people actively doing illegal work on this, so like keeping or releasing them in cracked versions or mm-hmm. maybe that's your, I don't know how your contacts to this, yeah, I don't know what clear zone are.
I think it's difficult because right now there's so many people in the fan community doing really good work about preserving stuff. But on the other hand, the games industry is actively trying to stop that right now. They're saying take all your stuff down. So what I guess we're hoping to do with the help of everybody else is to make a private archive, and it can go into that private archive, and then, you know, we're not making it publicly available, but it does mean when copyright runs out, there will be a copy hanging around because. You know, if we're not careful, the games industry, which I think it has a right to do, I'm not saying the games industry shouldn't crack down, but the games industry will crack down so efficiently on fan projects that, all that information may be difficult to find in a number of years' time.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's hard for a person working in an archive not to be able to do things, and it's very hard to stay legal in this way when you see it crumbling. To bits and pieces, and companies I think like Nintendo are not at all interested in preserving their heritage.
Yeah, I mean, so it seems, well, I think Nintendo are interested in preserving their heritage in as much as it's important for their intellectual property and to make them money because, you know, I mean, and I don't think that, again, I'm not portraying them as mercenary at all, but if Nintendo want to re-release their NES games on the Game Boy Advance, as they've just done, you know, they can make significant amounts of money out of that. So that, in a sense, is preservation. But it would be nice to have some independent preservation, which isn't based on the fact that a company thinks something's important. Because then, if a company thinks something is important, they also think other things are unimportant, and they're unlikely to get around to doing anything with those. So it seems.